Right. By the way, Nicodemus has come up a few times, and he's mentioned two more times in the gospel. Anybody know about that? Okay. And 7:50, where he kind of defends Jesus, and then toward the end, when he comes to anoint the body with spices and things. So it sounds like he's becoming a believer, but we only have like these three little sections about him. But it's kind of interesting and a little mysterious. We don't know exactly where he ends up. But we're looking at starting at 4:46. Now, I did some stuff primarily for Ben, and he's not here tonight, so because I do know what he said about maps. So, but I did think it was important to introduce this, or if you didn't know this already, if we haven't talked about it, I don't know. I wasn't here a couple times, but about 70 miles from Jerusalem to Galilee. So, and he's moving back and forth, as we've already seen. Those are the two locations that he's going to. So that's about a 2.5-day, 3-day walk. And so keep that in mind, you know, as he's got a pretty good little jaunt there. Israel's only 1/19th of the size of California, so keep that in mind too. It's not a really big place. It's a small place, relatively speaking. And then, I have something else. Oh yeah, I thought around, this is around Galilee, which is kind of interesting. There's a lot of stuff that didn't have anything to do with John, but although, yeah, Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter, and that kind of around the coast, they had these nice places. They weren't the size of Bill Gates' house on Lake Washington, but they were a nice place right there on the water. And then, you know, the stuff that takes place, Gennesaret. One of our friends named her daughter that. I can't even pronounce it hardly.
Gennesaret.
I don't know if that's...
That's
how she pronounced it. Yeah. they named her daughter there, I think. What'd you say? Somebody have a... How is it pronounced? Somebody have a better...
I said Gennesaret.
Well, that's what you said. We could say in French it's Gennesaret. Right? But I think it's that's what she... The name she... Anyway, that's Galilee, obviously, so that's easier to remember. Anyway, so there's... Cana is off to this side. It'd be out here somewhere, a few miles away from the lake itself. So... Just some details. What we're trying to do here as we look at this is these three questions: observation, interpretation, application. We never want to forget any of these. We want to make sure we get the last part in there as well. So as we look at this, we want to make sure we get all the facts, and we also want to find out what the meaning is. Because whatever application we're making, we can only make that within the meaning of the text. We can't go outside the text and just decide to make any meaning, you know, draw any meaning from it that we desire to. It's got to be controlled by the text. Okay, so with that, let's read from 46. Who'd like to read 46 to 54? Chapter 4, 46. Go ahead, Tim.
So he came again to Cana in Galilee, where he had made the water wine. And at Capernaum there was an official whose son was ill. When this man heard that Jesus had come from Judea to Galilee, he went to him and asked him to come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. So Jesus said to him, "Unless you see signs and wonders, you will not believe." The official said to him, "Sir, come down before my child dies." And Jesus said to him, "Go, your son will live." The man believed the word that Jesus spoke to him and went on his way. As he was going down, his servants met him and told him that his son was recovering. So he asked them the hour when he began to get better, and they said to him, "Yesterday at the seventh hour the fever left him." The father knew that was the hour when Jesus had said to him, "Your son will live," and he himself believed, and all his household. This was now the second sign that Jesus did when he had come from Judea to Galilee.
Okay, in this section we have two of the seven signs, and then we've already had the one, so it's the second and third that we'll be talking about tonight. Any questions as you look at this then? What's the main point here of John recording this for us, this particular section? What's his main point or main purpose?
These are written that we may believe.
Okay, he's written it so we may believe. So we go back to chapter 20, right? He's doing all these things. These signs are given so that we may believe, and that believing we have eternal life, right? That's chapter 20, 30, and 31. So all of these are not just recorded because they were kind of cool things that happened. They're recorded with a specific purpose. People challenge the miracles of Jesus. They're challenging John's purpose of helping us believe. That's why these are written. These are amazing. All of these signs are amazing, of course. All the signs Jesus did. This one, what makes this one a little different maybe than some of the others?
Distance miracle, right? Like, he's not right there. He's making something happen from the distance.
Yeah. Remote control. Healing. Wouldn't that be cool? You just like heal.
Also, I feel that the nobleman, he's like, come down. You know, you have to come here to heal him. And he was thinking more physical instead of spiritual.
Yeah, which as we see throughout, don't we see kind of this physical interpretation of everything. And then but there's a spiritual lesson going here.
There also seems to be like the element of belief involved here, like with the miracle at the wedding. Maybe his mom believed, obviously, right?
Yeah.
She's like, just do it. But the other people who were the beneficiaries of the miracle didn't have any, like, it wasn't predicated on their believing anything.
Right.
Whereas this request that the official makes, he makes it because he believes Jesus can do something, and then with that belief is, you know, he says he believed the word that Jesus spoke to him and went on his way. Like when he said, yeah, I'm going to heal him, he's like, great, thanks. And
yeah.
Like, off he goes. So I think that's maybe the first time we've seen the element of faith involved.
At least in John, yeah, no, definitely. Because, like you said, that's not a factor in, it's not a factor other than his mother in the wedding. You see that, of course, throughout the other Gospels, you see that element of faith. That's a really huge subject if you go to the miracles of Jesus, because in some places it says, in Mark it tells us that he couldn't do signs there because of their unbelief, which is an interesting statement that we have to spend a lot of time on kind of sorting that through that and discussing that. In other cases, he does miracles without. The lady touches him, and obviously she's showing faith there, but you know, so there's all these things that happen. Sometimes faith, sometimes not. When he walks on the water, it's not that nobody's faith. That's not based on anybody's faith, right? In fact, just the opposite. For a while, I mean, Peter sees him and says, "Well, I'm going to walk out there too," and he does for a little while, then sinks. So there's a lot of factors when we get into the faith aspect of these miracles. And so in John, we keep coming back to the point that he's recording these so that we are persuaded that Jesus is the Son of God, and that through his name we can have life, eternal life.
Yeah. Yeah, John, as he's writing his gospel, is developing this theme. We've heard of bear witness, we've heard of testimony,
mm-hmm.
we've heard of testimony of John the Baptist, the testimony of Jesus, the testimony of the Good Samaritan, the Samaritan woman.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of this section, verse 54, the word believe, or some form of that word, I counted right, it's been mentioned 17 times. So he's been describing the testimony and what has been taking place. But what's woven in here very richly is believe.
Yeah. It's the same word that's translated faith in some of the other Gospels, like Matthew, for example. So here it's belief, because we're kind of talking about that. Brady.
Also to go along with what you were saying earlier, too, there seems to be some emphasis on believing the word and not needing the sign. And that's contrasted here with the Galilean versus the Samaritan woman,
mm-hmm.
who didn't need to see anything. And then also just further developed a little bit later with the story of Thomas, when he was doubting, when Jesus says, blessed are those who have not seen and believed,
yeah.
and then pinned as our kind of goal statement for the whole book of John, these are written so that you might believe, because we don't have that benefit of seeing. You know,
right.
That is not part of our faith system or the building of our faith. You know, that's an interesting discussion that you make about, you know, faith versus signs and belief and all that stuff and how that kind of works together. But that's certainly not for us. We don't have the signs to develop the faith. We have the word.
Right.
And we can be blessed because of that.
Yeah. No, that's excellent, because that's true. And you see that interplay here. You see ultimately that's where he's going, is that, in fact, in this text, I think I have it as one of the questions. Sometimes Jesus' response seems harsh or at least unfriendly. When the nobleman approaches him about his sick son, note how Jesus responds. What does he say? You look at it again. He says, what's the first thing he says?
I was just going to say that it's interesting that he says that unless you see signs and wonders, you won't believe.
Right.
Yet then, two verses later, it says that he did believe without having seen whether his son was healed or not.
Yeah. So you wonder.
So it's kind of interesting if, like, was Jesus reading his heart going, I know you're not going to believe unless you see it, but then when he tells him that he did it, change his mind?
Yeah, and he could have been, you know, it's also possible that he says that for the benefit of the people around, because we see that in Mark as well, when the disciples come up and they couldn't cast out the demon. Do you remember that event in Mark? And they couldn't cast out the demons. They come out and they say, and then Jesus does, he says, these don't come out except by prayer and fasting, or prayer in the best text. In other words, they were relying on themselves to do that, and they don't do it without God. You know, it wasn't that they had all this power that they could use it, you know, arbitrarily. Christy, did you have something?
Well, you said it already. I think the you there, as I understood when I was studying it, said the you is a plural.
Uh-huh.
And the Galileans that were welcoming them there, that in verse 45. They were welcome to, because they'd seen what he'd done in Jerusalem.
Uh-huh.
And then he says, you see signs and wonders, you will not believe. I think he was talking to that whole group.
The whole bit, everybody.
And that also the other thing is that this is the third type of person that Jesus has taught. Nicodemus was a Jewish respected teacher, a Samaritan woman, a not respected Samaritan and a woman. And then this person was an official, probably to the Romans, so the gospel was to be preached to everybody.
That's another, that too is very good, because you see, through John, he's got this plan, and you can see it unfolding with the individuals that are chosen, that he chooses, because Jesus did all, remember it says the whole world wouldn't fill the books of his Isaiah chapter 21, which says that if you had, the whole world couldn't contain the books of all the things we did. So these are recorded. These certain things are recorded. But he's laying out a plan here, and it's done in individuals. It's done with this interplay of faith and not faith, or the faith and not needing, not faith and not, or I should say, signs and not needing the signs. He brings that out as well, in as Brady pointed out, and then the belief in the use of the term belief here, as opposed to the use of the term faith, which has a different connotation, even though it's coming from the same Greek word. It wouldn't fit here. Faith wouldn't fit in most of these things. There is, it would fit some places, but belief is the more basic word that you use for that initial impact you get, right? I mean, all of us, hopefully, what's the first word in the plan of salvation? You know? Well, besides here. That's debatable whether we put the H in there or the B first. We kind of learned the B, right? BRCB. You know, so you have the B. Believe, repent, confess, and be baptized, right? So you have that. And that's what he's laying out here. That's why this book is sometimes looked at as a little more evangelistic in its purpose or approach. Tim?
Oh, she said what I did about that you being plural. I didn't think I was talking to people.
Yeah, okay. That would include him, you know, but it he's making a point, right? That you don't... you're not going to believe. And he says later, I think it's chapter 6, is when he says, if you don't believe me, at least believe the signs. He's kind of resigned, you know, you got to see the signs. So if you don't believe me, you don't believe what I'm saying, well, at least believe the signs. And we'll get to that when we get to that. But that's an interesting addition to that.
I just wanted to say real quick, I think there is some development of a belief that the official had, because it says that... that he believed the word that Jesus said and then he went on his way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's different than believing that, that this is the Son of God. He just believed that Jesus could do what he said. He believed his word.
Right.
And then it says, when he got back to his home, it says it, and then in verse 53, and he himself believed and all of his household. So there's, to me, there's much more belief there now that he saw the miracle that Jesus did, and he's so impressed that even his household is believing. So he's convinced the rest of his house, everyone around him. So that's more than just believing the word that he can heal my son. It's something much bigger than that.
Yeah. It's, like you said, I think you were saying it's unfolding here. It's getting better. Remember the centurion who comes to Jesus in Matthew 8, and he says, Jesus says, I haven't seen such faith even in Israel, to him, this Roman centurion, because he believed in the authority of Jesus to do it. So there's something different about his belief, initial belief, than there is about this man coming to him. This man had the basic physical belief he can do these signs, and I want him to do it. But when he found out he did it by remote control, that ramped his faith up. We don't know the... Be very interesting to know the end of the story for all these people we meet. Like I said, even Nicodemus kind of, you know, he comes to Jesus, defends him, and he comes to him. He's, we don't know, but we're never told. You know, we don't read about him later on. We don't know what happened to him. So that's not the point of all this. The point of all this is for us to believe, for the readers of this to believe. So very good. Anything else? Did you read it? I don't want to. My peripheral vision is not being tested as good tonight. So.
I know, like you were saying, we don't know the end stories of the characters, but we do have the detail that when he gets home, he like inquires for details about how at what time his son was healed, mm-hmm. so that he can sort of like make the correlation, right?
Right.
And then he already said that he believed, but then he says he believed in all his household. So a little bit we know what he did next. With yes. that information, right? He shared what he knew and was apparently persuasive, or maybe the people in his household were just really obedient to him. But I mean, I think that it's hard to make somebody believe something, right? So they had to choose it.
Yeah, and that fulfills his purpose. So in some cases, we have people who are mentioned in the gospel then appear in the letters of Paul or something, you know, that then we kind of confirms that they were... We don't go that far with these, and that just kind of comes back to the point that his point here is fulfilled. He made his point, so he's moving on, and we're not going to get... It's not a biography of these people. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like his belief's pretty strong at the end of this, definitely. Brady?
And a really quick minor point, maybe, that his request was for Jesus to come down uh-huh. to the child, mm-hmm. and that's not the way that Jesus fulfilled that request.
Right.
So I think maybe just a good minor point to say, you know, sometimes when we pray things, we want it very specifically laid out for us, and it doesn't really work that way. No. But a lot of times we can't see the end game. I think in this story, Jesus did, he did fulfill the request, and he did it with the maximum amount of benefit for that person. So not only do you get the child being well, but you get the belief of the surrounding family members, which is kind of nice to see.
Two for one.
Yeah.
And just to kind of come back to when the centurion comes to Jesus in Matthew 8, he says, he said, I will come and heal him. This is Jesus' words. I will come and heal him. This is Matthew 8:7. The centurion said, Lord, I'm not worthy to have you come under my roof, but only say the word and my servant will be healed. You see the difference? And then that's when Jesus, for I too am a man under the authority with soldiers under me. And I say to one, go, and he goes, and another, come, and he comes. Do my servant do this? And he does it. When Jesus heard this, he marveled, and I think it's only said maybe two times in the gospel that Jesus marveled. That's notable. He says, he marveled and said to those who fought, truly I tell you, no one in Israel have I found such faith. So that's faith to start with. I mean, he had faith in Jesus to start with as a centurion. And of course, you know, in a book written to Jews, that's pretty notable and interesting. Dan, bring it.
I don't know if I can articulate this thought very well, but I think we tend to read, unless you see signs and wonders, you will not believe, as very rude and dismissive. and belittling of all the people around him. But another way to read it is also just as an explanation for why he's doing the signs, because clearly he does the signs, and how John has it laid out is the signs are very important to his ministry. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he's, it's necessarily an insult, but he's also, at the same time, his purpose of coming to the earth is not to do signs and wonders.
Right.
There's a reason he's doing signs and wonders, so that they'll believe about the greater purpose that he's coming for. And right. If it was all about the signs and wonders and just to amaze people, he could have very easily brought the whole company with him, made a big procession down to where the boy was, and made a big ceremony of it.
Right.
But he didn't. The only way anyone knows that God was fulfilled was that one man who left. The rest of the crowds don't know because they didn't go with him. And so I feel like it's almost like he's trying to take the emphasis off. Like, you need these signs and wonders to believe, so I'm going to give them to you, but that's not what I'm about. So.
Yeah. No, that's right. And I tend to read Mark 9 into a little bit where he's actually scolding the disciples, right? He almost uses the exact same language. Unless you see signs and wonders, you won't believe. And he's saying that their faith was weak because he says this kind only comes out by faith. So there could, because in that case they were trying to use their own power that they thought they had, and they didn't have it apart from God, and they need to learn that lesson. But and the reason I ask this question, because you see it back in chapter 2 when he, in response to his mother, right? I mean, it says, what does that have to do with me? And it depends on how you read, what tone you bring to that. But I see that throughout John. We see that kind of thing. Do you want to be made well? He says to the guy at the well in chapter 5 here. You go, okay, well, that's kind of an odd question for a guy who's been lame for 38 years, you know? You just say you want to be made well. So there is an edge to it a little bit. Maybe it's I think there might be a point there, and I, with this being plural, of course, I think when we see the plural use of the word "you," it means there's a broader audience to it, to the point he's making. Yes, Thomas.
It's interesting, though, that you know it specifically calls out Capernaum here, and then I don't think it says it in John, but when you look at Matthew, chapter 11. Capernaum is one of the cities that's specifically called out.
Mm-hmm.
It says, you know, in verse 23, and you, Capernaum, will not be exalted to heaven, will you? You will not descend to Hades for the miracle. If the miracles that had occurred in Sodom, which occurred in you, it would have remained to this day. So it's interesting, though, that the signs are so important, and yet even this one didn't seem, I mean, if we kind of connect those two, assume that the Matthew account was, after all, he did all this, they still just, for whatever reason, it just wouldn't take. He's doing amazing things, and it just wouldn't take.
Right.
They just didn't get it. And
right. No, that's a good point. And as Brady brought out later, much later, chapter 20, when he says, blessed are those you see, so you believe. Blessed are those who don't see and believe. You know, that's a pretty powerful statement in this book where the signs are so important, but he's still saying those are secondary. And remember, this, it's not by accident this is set right next to Samaria and what happened there when these people didn't see any signs and still believed. They actually just believed the word. That's what he wanted. Later on in chapter 6, after chapter 6, when he feeds the 5,000, then he says, you don't follow me because you believe. He's up. You call me because you saw the side of your belly's filled. And he's pretty strong. He's pretty hard on them, even though he's doing these things that are irrefutable. You know, that's the point, I think, is that he's doing these things that you can't refute. You can't. What other conclusion are you going to draw other than the conclusion that you should draw, that he's got power from God? Nicodemus comes to him, remember? Well, we know you're a teacher from God. Oh, okay. He could have just jumped in. He kind of does anyway, right? Kind of just jumped in. Okay, so what do you think about that? It's when, like, the rich young ruler comes to Jesus and says, good teacher, so why you call me good? He's always cutting to the chase, is the way I see it. He's getting to the core, the root of the matter. And the root of the matter is, he's the Son of God. That's the point, not the sign and the fancy stuff he does, you know, that he does to try to convince people of that. It's the fact that he is, and that's where he keeps driving at.
I was going to say, John does not call it a sign. But I think Jesus telling the Samaritan woman all that she ever did is kind of a sign.
Kind of a sign, yeah. It's not one of the seven signs, but yeah, no. And the resurrection's a sign, right? So there's at least eight, maybe 9, 10, 12. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. He sometimes he goes through and the people can't touch him, those kinds of things. He comes through the door if he did, you know. We have some debate about that, but he comes, you know, at the end in John 20 when the people, they're meeting. There's a lot of these signs that aren't referred to as signs. That's a good point. Okay. And let's move on, just unless somebody has something. Did I miss anybody that had their hand up? No? Okay. Chapter 5. Verse, there's several things going on here, but let's go 5 through 1 through 17. I'm going to read that much. I'd like to read that. Ange, go ahead.
After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is in Jerusalem by the sheep gate a pool in Aramaic called Bethesda, which has 5 roofed colonnades. In these lay a multitude of invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. One man was there who had been there invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him laying there and knew that he had already been there a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be healed?" The sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, and while I am going, another steps down before me." Jesus said to him, "Get up, take up your bed, and walk." And at once the man was healed, and he took up his bed and walked. Now that day was the Sabbath, so the Jews said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath, and it is not lawful for you to take up your bed." But he answered them, "The man who healed me, that man said to me, 'Take up your bed and walk.'" They said to him, "Who is the man who said to you, 'Take up your bed and walk?'" Now the man who had been healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn, as there was a crowd in the place. Afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, "See, you are well. Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you." The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had healed him. And this was why the Jews were persecuting Jesus, because he was doing these things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them, "My Father is working until now, and I am working."
Yeah, we probably should read verse 18 kind of in connection with that. And this, because this is another, and this is why, verse 16, then this is why, verse 18, the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him, because not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. So they saw that. There are people who say today that Jesus never claimed to be the Son of God. They haven't read the Bible very carefully. But these people figured that out from what he was doing. And took it as a negative, of course. Okay, so what do we got here? We've got a lot of stuff going on. There's in terms of place. He's going down Jerusalem. So we got a few days in here in between all this. And what's different about this? Let's get this way. What's going on here that's different than what we've seen so far in some of the other signs? Yeah, this is one where Jesus actually takes the initiative, right? And we haven't seen that in that. You know, his mom asks him to do this, and then he's got this this official comes to him, and now he just does it. It's interesting to me. This is an important point, I think, that we should always think about when we look at these healing miracles that Jesus did, and that is that he didn't heal everybody. You know, when people say it's purely out of compassion that Jesus did it, I think they're missing the point. Because he doesn't heal. There's obviously other people sitting around this pool. He chooses one man to heal. How do you think they felt about that? I wonder if it's politically correct too. I don't invalid. I don't know if this would read in the new politically correct version. So he chooses this one man who obviously didn't have any faith to start with, right? He just like, he says, "Do you want to be made well?" He goes, "Well, you know, I can't get in the pool. And that's my solution, is I need to get in there. So put me in there before everybody else, and I'll get, you know, maybe that'll help." He's thinking very physically, and then he doesn't even know who does it, right? So
why that is... That kind of defends, though, his action. He doesn't even know he's talking to Jesus or someone claiming to be God. So to say he doesn't have faith, I don't know that that's exactly fair. because he just thinks it's some Joe Schmo coming up to him, striking up a conversation.
Right.
So why would he have faith at that point?
Well, that's my point.
Okay.
My point is that he didn't. In the other ones, we see some element, some level of faith, right? Whether it's the mom, because she knows she can do whatever he says, you know, well, she knows. And then, and most of the miracles throughout the Gospels there's an element of faith in there. I mean, faith in that he can do what he does. In this case, he's not even initiating. He doesn't have that kind of faith. He's just not, you know, it's. In fact, in verse 15. Well, here's another case, though. Here's another case of the response or the way he talks to people. Verse 14, Jesus found him in the temple. He said, "See, you're well. Sin no more. Nothing worse may come." That's just like... what the guy said is, he's healed now. What's he going to say? You know, but that's almost like, okay, I healed you. I got a right to tell you what to do. I've got authority now.
So... I don't know. Maybe this is a stretch. But right before he says this, we hear about how the Jews were mad at the man for taking up his mattress, and that was not lawful for him to do that. So is it possible that Jesus saying, "Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you," he means, put your mattress down so that they don't you know, so that they don't do something to you because that's unlawful.
Yeah. I don't know. It could be. I mean, we don't have a lot of information. We don't know what that, you know, sin no more. What does he mean by sin no more? What previous sin is he referring to?
Well, this is a troubling passage in a lot of ways, I think, because there are people who believe that if you sin, something physical is going to happen to you. And I can see this being a sticky spot to be in if you're reading this just like that, you know. Of course, I don't believe that, but I'm saying there are people who do.
Yeah.
And so that's an interesting...
I know. I have a note in my Bible, I'm sure, put in there some... They didn't put it this time, but result of sin, ? You know, that he's suggesting that. That's interesting because when you get to chapter 9, right? But he's done a lot of stuff on that.
Counteracts that point, right?
Yeah.
He's saying it's not this man or his parents that sinned, but that the works of God might be manifest in him.
That's what I loved about this book. I mean, you keep just kind of read through it and you start seeing these different connections, you know, and it's kind of amazing.
Well, and that assumes that he means something physical. So he could mean sin no more or less a worse thing come upon you, meaning your spiritual death is way worse than being lame for your entire life.
That's the way we take it, definitely, right?
Right.
I think what's coming out is that, okay, what's he hearing there?
Right.
Because that was that direct connection that the Jews, they were taught that, you know, sin. So who had to
answer?
I don't know. Amy and then...
Sure. Appreciated Aaron's speculation because I like trying to walk through that too. So, but since I walked through and followed her like train of thinking, I'm thinking it can't be that he's referring to the bed because he's the one who told him to pick it up. So if that were sin, he wouldn't be saying to do it.
Right.
But it is interesting that obviously the fact that he's carrying the bed brings him to the attention of the Jewish leaders. But their real irritation, at least their claimed irritation, is that Jesus performs miracles on the Sabbath day, so that he is working. And I think that we have sort of contended, like, with the idea that Jesus can do whatever he wants to do, like, he's the maker of the Sabbath, so he can rest or not rest just as he sees fit. It's interesting that he's given somebody, like, a job on this day,
to carry this, take up his bed.
I mean, I don't quite know what I want to make of that exactly, beyond the fact that I think it means I can do dishes on Sunday. But maybe not. Maybe I can delegate to someone else to do dishes on Sunday, and that is okay for them to do. So, anyway, I don't know. I find the Sabbath sort of perplexing.
It is, and you know, the take up the bed, I hadn't thought about this till you guys brought it up. I mean, in the sense the taking up the bed to walk actually put him in a bad position. He didn't need it to do that, right? I mean, he didn't.
Does he even want that bed anymore? I mean, he's
yeah, that's got to be a.
That's
got to be a grimy bed. And then I thought, what's worse than being lame for 38 years, too? He says something worse is going to come up on you. I mean, what are you talking about? You know, take down your edge.
Yeah, hold on just a sec so okay. I can remember what it was. rats, just a second. Oh, sin no more, and you were like, what's he done? Well, he's 38. He's done something. That's all I wanted to say.
Yes.
I mean, he has sin. Invalids,
yeah,
sin too.
Yeah,
that's all I wanted to say. Yeah. He does have sin.
Yes. Yeah, sure. Everybody does,
yeah.
Right? He's not. He could say this to everybody, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
So it's just interesting that he says it to this guy.
And maybe. So.
The water into wine thing is something, but the healing stuff always gets to me. Like the healing power of Jesus in this and that. I had a patient recently that came in, and she had this eye condition that was leaving her with one eye that was pretty atrophied, and I'm looking at this eye in the microscope, and there's so many different things that would need to happen for her to get any inkling of light perception in that eyeball. And at this point, the game plan for me is just, I'm trying to keep the pressures down so that it's not painful, just kind of treating it that way, and then talking to her parents about there's really nothing that can be done here, and then thinking about, I think it's significant. He's been an invalid for 38 years. Just imagining what that person looked like and the amount of atrophy that has happened to his entire body, if he's only able to kind of sort of drag himself to the pool and that's it, that's all he can do.
Can't even get in. He can't, yeah, barely.
And thinking
that.
About how much stuff would have to happen to get him to be even upright and all the just amounts of physical therapy and prosthetics and things that it would take to get him to be able to be mobile. And the amount of time, and then this happens in an instant. It's just amazing.
For those of you with medical background, have an even better appreciation for all this. Terry, I passed you up. I'm sorry. You had your hand up.
It was along what Brady is describing, because his legs would just be bone and skin. There is no muscle there. So of all the individuals that he could have healed there, we just know that he's been an invalid for at least 38 years, because it says, but it could be older than that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very traumatic to have someone actually get up and then carry something. He's not getting a prescription for physical therapy for a year.
No.
You're going to carry your bed towards the temple on the Sabbath day. So both of those, it's a Sabbath day, so that's going to really stir the ire of the Jews. And plus this man, he has no muscle in his legs. And of course, was not walking. But even if you could say walk, there's no strength there. Just like how Brady described it. So that's very dramatic too, that he can carry something.
Right.
Besides his own body weight.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in my cast for 3 weeks after a skiing accident, and when my leg came out of that, it was like this big around. I couldn't believe it. I was grossed out. You know, looking at my leg, and I was pretty young, you know.
That's so, probably why Jesus picked him. I mean, it says Jesus knew he had been there for a long time.
Yeah.
So he asked him, hey, do you want to be healed?
Yeah.
That's probably why he picked him specifically.
Well, and
because an even bigger miracle that somebody who had been lame that long.
And then I've used this phrase before, but you cure a beggar, you put him out of work, right? It's not what he's going to do. He's going to go get a job.
Well, he carried it.
Right? I mean, I'm sure you've been taken care of.
On the Sabbath, apparently, so it's got an extra day.
Angie?
Well, and this also goes along with that, but it struck me how immediate that had to have been, because if Jesus said to me, get up, take up your bed and walk, and I didn't know who Jesus was, because he said he didn't know who this man was, I would look at the guy like, have you lost your mind? I can't get up. I've not been able to get up for 38 years. So immediately, he knew his body was healed, and the muscles were restored, and everything happened just like that, because he got up.
And that I think that's why it's recorded that way.
It's amazing.
Yeah, no, it is.
And so maybe this was already said, but after all of that, the Pharisees' reaction is, It is the Sabbath. You can take up your bed. Isn't that the main point of this whole thing, right?
Well, yeah. From
it,
right? Well,
I mean,
yeah.
Maybe I already got sad and I just missed
no,
it
I don't think
in my own little world right. over here. But yeah, that's the thing. After all this that we're describing and how amazing that would be, that's the response. What are you doing? You shouldn't be walking around without your bed right now. And that just proves, I mean, and that's why Jesus healed, not because of his faith, but because this point needed to be made. Also, one other little thing. Verse 16 says, and this was why the Jews were persecuting Jesus. Unless I missed it, there's no persecution recorded in the Gospel of John yet. So, there's a lot, what's that?
Yeah, right.
I so mean, he's not referring, he must be referring to what's been recorded in other places, or what people just know in general.
Well, and then it raises up another, in verse 18, right? This is why they were seeking to kill him. All the more, it says, to kill him. So persecuting includes that, but all the more, because he made himself equal to God. So, yeah, I mean, one of the things, and we see this constant opposition in John. Remember that I said this is the gospel of rejection, basically. This is that's always in the background and sometimes in the foreground. That is that somebody's rejecting Jesus, even in light of all of this, even when they've seen these very explicit miracles that prove that he's something different, as Nicodemus pointed out. There's this opposition because he does these things on the Sabbath. Let's just take a minute. I know I've probably passed up some of you, but just take a couple of minutes. So what? So what? For us. What's the so what here for us? I mean, this is all good and well, we all believe in Jesus already, right? So, do you believe in Jesus a little more now?
Have a heart willing to learn and willing to hear.
Okay.
I mean, like what Tyler said, they're calling him out because he's carrying his bag because their heart is so hard they can't see what Jesus is trying to tell them.
Yeah. No.
Right. Also, I think it just goes to point out the legalism kind of that, like Tyler said. They totally missed the point. And all they're seeing is this guy carrying his bed. And he shouldn't be carrying his bed.
Right.
Who cares about the fact that he's been lame for 38 years, you know?
Like, if this is going to be, this sounds terrible, but if Kathy Wilson came in on Sunday and didn't take the Lord's Supper, would you go get on to her for not taking the Lord's Supper on Sunday? Or would you be rejoicing that Kathy Wilson was here? I mean, it's ridiculous.
I don't think I understood the question.
So, it's not a question. It's not a question, it's just the analogy I was thinking of.
Well,
if Kathy Wilson came in and she has not been able to walk or talk for a decade and came in and didn't take the Lord's Supper on Sunday morning, did not take it, yes, didn't is the key element, would there be people that would say, she came all the way in here and didn't even take the Lord's Supper?
Well, what if she had a hat on?
There are some people that are like that.
Hat on or a bottle of water.
So is Jesus picking a fight? Is he picking a fight?
I would say, with no time left,
yeah.
I would say yes. I don't know that I'd use that language, that term.
Yeah.
But I yes, I would say.
But I think that's why he tells him to pick up the bed. Because in a sense, it's rejecting this hypocrisy.
I think you're right.
Idea.
I think you're right. So with that, we are...